Hello everyone, my name is Phil Blancato and I'm CEO and President of Latimer Thalmann Asset Management. Welcome to another weekly update. Today is August the 5th. As we move on through summer, hopefully you're enjoying the warm, long, hot summer days. Well, last week I talked a little bit about the situation we're in being similar to an ebb tide, in that period of time in the ocean when you're not at high tide or low tide, but somewhere in between. And the reason being, we were trying to determine whether or not the second wave, if we can call it that, I'm not sure we ever made it out of the first, but the second wave was real and that it was going to continue to expand and grow and lead to significant more fatalities. Would there be new developments on the medical front? We hadn't heard anything of significance other than phase 3 trials starting, but nothing of significance. Would it be that we would get an economic stimulus package to continue to sustain the U.S. economy into the fall and hopefully there would be some sort of therapeutic or antiviral? And would the economic results of the current third quarter be good enough to get us going in the right direction again? Well, what a difference a week makes. I do think it's safe to say, in my opinion, that we've gone from the ebb tide to beginnings of a high tide. And by that, I mean that the tide is changing. And I don't think it's changing negatively. When you look at the most recent data, there's good news report coming out of places that were most hard hit. First, let's start off where we usually do in talking about the virus and the latest statistics that go along with it. As of right now, there's 19 confirmed cases globally. Of those, there's 700,000 that have tragically passed away. The outbreak so far has caused not only numerous deaths, it has created a global economic situation that has been somewhat difficult to navigate. When you think about where the rest of the world is, China, Korea, and us, everybody's slightly different positioning. Some areas of the world have done significantly better, like China and Korea, that have had strict requirements. They had experience from things like SARS and MERS that gave them a process to follow, but at this point, a very low levels of infection. Europe, which we've become accustomed to doing very well as of late, as of recently, has had a bit of a spike. You look at places like Spain, there's a small spike taking place. Now, it's not significant yet, but even Germany to a very small degree, and to a degree, Belgium to a small amount as well, has got some concerns. The daily new cases in Spain are averaging around 2,000, but however, in fairness to them, their fatality rates continue to stay pretty low. When you look at the 7-day moving average for Spain, they're closing in on 3,000, so a bit of an uptick. The 7-day moving average for places like Germany, Italy, and France all have had a slight uptick as well. For example, Germany was 500 new cases on average per day over a 7-week average. Now is up to about 1,000. So we're not the only ones experiencing the inability to navigate this. Sometimes it does lead to increased consequences, like further shutdowns. For example, France, as of late, is considering increasing their shutdowns and has ticked them up just a bit. Germany has increased its shutdowns a bit. Italy has not as of yet, but they were never as fully open as they were in Germany and France. Spain has also increased. So giving an example of thinking about the economy of 100% open, today when I look at France, it's only 25% open. That's a slight increase from where they were at about 20. Germany, for example, was basically 40% open, and now they're only 50% open. So a bit of a change there. When you look at the way they wear masks in Europe, on average, between 65 to 85% of the people who live there wear masks when they're in a public marketplace. So like us, they're dealing with a bit of a spike. And when I look at the overall cases around the globe, there's no doubt that there's still great need to monitor it. There have been 12.6 million cases with an outcome. 11.9 have recovered, 700,000 have passed away fatally. Currently, we have the most deaths of any country in the world, but compared to the number of people who have gotten sick in the United States, we are significantly better than everyone else. The good news is, and why I think the tide is turning, places like California, which were under the microscope, the 7-day moving average of new cases in California are down 7%, from 8,600 to 7,900. The 7-day moving average in Arizona, down from 2,600 to 2,000, a 22% improvement. Florida, a 23% improvement, from 10,000 to roughly 8,000. I'm giving you round numbers. The only place that's seen a bit of a spike continued is Texas, up 1.73%, or from 8,079 to 8,219. but certainly a flattening. And in the last few days, actually significantly better. So if I look at the three-day moving average, the numbers are down. More importantly, the death rate. In California, while we've seen a spike from 100 cases to 143 on a seven-day moving average, or a 38% increase, it's still a fractional number compared to the 39 people that live in the state. When I look at Texas, they're down 15% from 229 to 194. Arizona down 16% from 74 to 62. The Northeast in general, everywhere but Florida, down 28%. The only state that's seeing a spike in fatalities is Florida. And two out of the last 3 days were excellent. Yesterday was a terrible day for them with 256 people passing away. But certainly when you look at the big four, the trend is our friend. And a place like Arizona over the last month has had a almost 50% drop in new cases over that time period. Put it a different way, when you look at the total country, our 7-day moving average is now 58,000 new cases per day. But we've tested over 65 million people. So our testing rate is now second most in the world, only behind China. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not convinced the China data is actually completely competent. When I look at the death rate, our 7-day moving average of the death rate is 1,075. Key point here, that over, when you look at the number of new cases on a 7-day average back in April, it was 29,000 per day. Today it's roughly called 59,000. So obviously that's a significant jump. When you think about it, it's nearly a double, almost 30,000 people more, just about, when you look at it squarely. Now, more than that number increase, call it a double in new cases per day, and we were higher but a week ago, we were in the 70,000, so we've improved over the last few weeks here. The one thing to have noted is that the death rate back then was 2,200 on average per day back in April. So now our death rate is more than 50% lower than it was back then, but our new case rate is more than double. And the reason for that is, one, the virus seems to be less potent. We're getting more and more news on that. Two, it's younger people. Three, we have better ways of treating it. An excellent report out of Italy talked about how when early on in the virus, for everybody that went to the ICU, 60% of them passed away. Now that number is down to 40%, so a significant improvement. There's really three reasons why. First, they're delivering more oxygen. They're actually giving a dose of high oxygen at first and then higher oxygen on a regular basis going forward, rather than intubating. Intubating seems to be only in the extreme necessary situations, which they try and avoid. Second, they're giving blood thinners or medicines to eliminate blood clots, which was part of the fatality issue as well. And third is tackling inflammation. And that when the lungs get full, they need to bring the inflammation down. And they're realizing existing drugs like dimoxazone and aerosolizing other typical asthma drugs and even high blood pressure drugs are significantly helping bring down inflammation in lungs. Those three approaches are helping bring the fatality rate down, plus it being more younger people now than it was before. And so that's exciting news that we're able to perhaps manage the virus better. So for example, in California, the hospital system has capacity of 74,000 beds, roughly 11,000 ICU beds. Of those, 1,892 are occupied by COVID, which were roughly 2,000 last week. So an improvement there in that we're getting people out of the hospital. Arizona had 800 people in the ICU for COVID. Now they're down to 638. That's another significant improvement from 57% of beds occupied by COVID down to 44. Florida basically flat, but what we have seen in Florida as far as the ICU patients, there's 15% of ICU beds available. However, the new case trend has gone down from 15,000 on average to 9,000 over since July 11th to July 29th, so a significant improvement. We would expect to see the fatality rate and the number of people in the hospitals go down as well. 27% of total beds in the hospital are currently occupied by COVID, where that was 30 last week, so we're already seeing an improvement there. And Texas, while their actual ICU bed capacity is still about 16%, and we've seen about 100 additional people on average in the ICU, what we're seeing is the infection rate has come down from 17 to 12, and that's because the number of new cases has come down precipitously. So the big four that have been talked so much about have greatly improved. And that's exciting news, because when you think about the estimates of roughly 230,000 Americans passing away, If we could, in fact, figure out a way to get people out of the hospital, then certainly there's an opportunity to make that number be less. And that, from a human standpoint, would be not only helpful to our economy, but let's be honest, with the people that are passing away and the impact there. The reason why we've had so much success is some of the things we've talked about. Not only the new therapies you use in hospitals, but it's also drugs like the remdesivir drug from Gilead. They actually now have a second drug that's existing. They're testing to see if it works, and we'll hear more about that soon. But there was some exciting news this week on two new fronts. First, there was a plasma study that came out and said if you give someone plasma 3 days into the illness when they've been first admitted to the hospital, they have a 50% chance of not passing away. That's a very impressive result. And that plasma has always been a source of helping people out from the beginning of viruses. Going back to the early days when certainly we remember the Spanish flu or other cases, going back to how things have been traditionally done, it was always using plasma to some degree. Well, this study coming out of Cornell Wheel has told us that there is a possibility, actually a very strong one, and soon to be approved by the FDA, that whether it's a plasma pill or using plasma from people who have recovered, in this study where they reviewed 3,000 patients, 50% of them had significant improvement to where they were out of the hospital and did not pass away. So this is exciting that we're now realizing that plasma can be an effective way of treating the disease, even with its long history of it. And in fact, more than 53,000 people have been treated with plasma up until now, and it's showing great results. So that's good news on that front. Probably the most exciting piece of news since we last talked is the news from a company called Eli Lilly. And in the Eli Lilly scenario, we've learned something really exciting. They have a therapeutic, and their therapeutic is somewhat different than all the other vaccines on the marketplace. There are two out there. They're mononuclear therapeutics that use what they're basically doing is taking the traditional approach of plasma, and they're replicating it in a synthetic form. And what these drugs do is as they go into your body, they put sort of a sticky layer around your cells, not allowing for the disease to connect to your cells. And it also attacks the cell and creates a blocker, so the disease actually can't get to your cells. And why this is so important is because it gives us a way for temporarily improve the situation of the disease. It does not a vaccine. It could last up until a month. But it does get you out of the hospital and gets you better. So a pill that makes you better. This and Regeneron are two of the leading firms on this. Now, it's being done around the world. It's sort of using an older approach with plasma, repurposing it today in a way that we think could be very effective. Eli Lilly has put themselves out there in a phase 3 trial where not only are they inoculating people in a 2,400-person study, but believe it or not, they're doing this by going after folks, and they started this on Monday, they're going after folks who are in nursing homes. So in other words, they're going to the most high-risk, most vulnerable people, giving them the drug and seeing if they can recover. They're doing this by taking, believe it or not, a mobile lab. What they've done is taking RVs, repurposing them to turn them into a mobile lab, going to hotspots, and inoculating them when the outbreak starts, the people that are surrounding with them, and the people that are sick. Folks, to be honest with you, if this works, and we're going to find out in pretty short order here, this is not going to take long. This is going to take the better part of 2 weeks to a month to really know how this goes. If this works, that you're able to protect the elderly in nursing homes with this therapeutic, this is absolutely a game changer. It's probably the most exciting thing we've talked about since we began these calls. And while I am excited about the success of the Modernas of the world, and I'll touch on them in just a minute, this one really tells me that there is an opportunity here to give us something that can get us out of this terrible situation, not only get us back to work, but to protect people who are sick. And I think that's very exciting. It kind of went by the radar, and not a lot was said about it, much to my surprise. But this is one that I think is very exciting, and that's why in the past you told me I'm much more excited about when I hear news about therapeutics versus traditional vaccines, because vaccines are very difficult to develop. They have to be proven, tested, and made sure they work. And there's no doubt, companies like Merck that are in phase 2 trials announced this week, a vaccine out of Moscow that Dr. Fauci actually warned to say, Moscow's already considering inoculating their population starting in October, but they haven't done it on human trials. So they're going to use a drug that hasn't been tested. That sounds very scary to me. Sinopharm is a company out of China, has a vaccine that they're beginning to use not only in Brazil, but taking on a very large phase 3 study in places like Indonesia. AstraZeneca is a name we've talked a lot about with Oxford University. I actually think the cost of their vaccine is only going to be $4 a dose. Very exciting. But they showed results that a single dose of the vaccine gives you a fourfold increase in antibodies versus somebody who recovered from the disease for 95% of their participants. That is spectacular numbers. So while I'm excited about Eli Lilly and their therapeutic give us a bridge to a vaccine. So we're having success on the vaccine front. We're just not there yet, probably to the end of the year or the new year. The Eli Lilly situation buys us that bridge to when, say, Moderna, for example. Moderna is enrolling 30,000 people in a study. AstraZeneca and Oxford together are doing a 50,000-person study. They both started on Monday. Moderna is ramping up the testing as quickly as possible to be able to get results from their trial by October or November. But we still need something to get us to October or November. That's why I think Eli Lilly is critical. So it's a two-step process. Good news by Pfizer. They were going to up their doses to 120 million doses available globally and 100 million doses for the United States. That's new news. Johnson & Johnson worked out a deal with the federal government to receive funding up to $1 billion, and their experimental drug is entering phase 2 trials as we speak. Novavax came out with information yesterday saying that of the first set of data, 131 volunteers showing that after two doses of the vaccine, participants developed neutralizing antibodies at a level more than four times the average. So they as well have had a very successful first test. Some of the participants had some minor side effects that lasted a few days, but nothing of significance. So you're seeing numerous companies come to market with a vaccine that should be available to us in relative short order. Really exciting news from the idea that we are moving quickly on the drug front. Because all this plays into economics, and the economics right now are interesting. When you worry about a phase two, whether it's in Europe or ours, looking better, no doubt about it, but certainly we still have a spike in new cases and a concern about people passing away. It comes down to how are we doing? Well, our GDP for the second quarter came out, and it was pretty horrific. Down negative 32.9% on an annualized basis for the year. But be very careful. We were actually down 9.5% in growth for the second quarter. If you extrapolate that over a year, then we get to that horrific 33% number. So it's not as if we went down by a third of our total revenue. We would potentially do that if we did it for four quarters in a row. In pure dollar terms, we went from basically a $19 trillion economy at the end of the first quarter to a $17 trillion economy by the end of the second quarter. Still horrifically bad. And don't get me wrong, it looks like we're going to spend $4 trillion to keep our economy afloat. So a net effect of $6 trillion is a big number. No doubt about it. Using that word T scares the heck out of me. But certainly no doubt, I think when you look at these headlines, you got to be careful that you don't get too absorbed in the fact that they sound so draconian and so bad. To give you an idea of some of the other economic data that's been out there, we're not the only ones in a tough spot. So yes, we had a horrifically bad quarter, but so did places like Europe. They were down 40% on an annualized basis, or 12% for the quarter. So equally bad numbers. They're actually recovering a bit better. Recently, the American dollar is weakening. And the reason why it's weakening against many global currencies is because we're being seen as a country that's still in the dark. We're still in the woods because of our significant second wave. While Europe is having one, not as bad as ours, and China and Korea and places in the Asian Pacific Rim haven't. And so we're seeing a bit of the weakening dollar with the expectations that our economy is going to take slower to reopen. But so far, the data actually is suggesting a bit of a slowing, but nowhere near as been talked about over the last few weeks in this ebb tide environment. Today, the ADP unemployment number came out saying we added another 167,000 jobs in July. The problem with that number is last month they had to revise the number by 2.5 million higher. So ADP isn't the most reliable number. This week, we're going to find out the real number reported by the federal government, and we could see unemployment drop down to below 11%. That'd be a significant improvement. And I'm somewhat optimistic on that because when I see initial jobless claims are not getting worse, they're basically leveling off, still around 1.4 million per week. I'm not overly concerned because I think the economy is opening up enough to add people back. We'll find out for sure here in a few days. Why I also believe that is we look at ISM manufacturing, a survey of manufacturers in the United States, and they're increasingly optimistic. What they're finding is that in the month of July, heading into August and heading into September, new orders for the month of July/August were higher in the month of July than they were since September 2018. Production was higher in the month of July than any time since August 2018. And those were strong months. So on a scale of, call it 40 being a very negative number to 60 being a very positive number, ISM manufacturing came in at 54.2 in July. So it's a strong rebound, telling us that there's actually more growth in the underlying economy than we thought. Personal spending is up 5%. People are spending the money they receive. We're seeing the sentiment in the economy be down a little bit, only because folks are down because of the idea of a second wave hurting the U.S. economy. But some of the data is showing that we're seeing pent-up demand by people being locked up and very low interest rates actually having an impact on growth. For example, existing home sales are up 16% month over month. With some of the lowest mortgage rates in our history, the housing market's actually pretty strong. There could be some defaults down the road, but as of right now, that's not the case. So when you look at the economic data, it's really pretty interesting that it really comes back to the same old thing. The U.S. consumer's hanging in there. When we look at spending, actually, it's really pretty fascinating. Folks that are getting money from the federal government are spending it. In fact, low-income consumers, those who make less than $50,000 a year, have increased their spending by 15.3% in June to the highest level on record. Middle income, $50,000 to $125,000, increased 9.4%, and upper income, 4.8%. So folks that needed the money to buy things are using it for that matter. That's why the next round of the federal stimulus bill is really very important. While it's unlikely in the next bill we're going to see another $600 a week stipend from the federal government on top of state aid, I would assume it's probably going to be something like $200 or $300. That continued benefit buys us a bridge to the other side of this pandemic, waiting for the therapeutic or the vaccine to help us get people back to work fully. But so far, it's working. And that's why the U.S. data for the beginnings of the third quarter in July and here into August, while not as good as we had hoped them to be because of the second wave, are still not terrible. And in fact, as we watch the CARES Act come through with probably protections for small businesses and schools, we watch them be able to bring people back to work without the threat of lawsuits. We're going to need that to a degree because there is going to be a concern around who comes back to work and what are the unintended consequences of it, who goes back to school and what are the unintended consequences of it. School alone could add up to 25 million jobs if we get people back into the school system. Obviously, we need to do it safely and carefully to protect our children. But certainly, as an economic standpoint, it can be robust when it comes to the idea of generating economic activity. So when you put it all together, the current medical environment, it gives you much reason for optimism. When I see things like gold that are breaking out to all-time highs, it shows me there's a lot of people who are not optimistic, that they think I'm squarely wrong, that in fact, this second wave is serious, the U.S. economy is struggling along, the fatality rate's going to go much higher, and we're not going to grow out of this. And not only are we going to be in a bad situation, but we're going to lag Europe and China and South Korea. So for that reason, you're seeing gold go to all-time highs. I take the other side of that. I don't think that's fair. I think medicine wins. We're seeing it from the phase one, phase two, and phase three trials. I think medicine wins by using traditional therapies like plasma, using the Gilead drug remdesivir, using steroids to bring down lung inflammation. So far, the fatality rate, while up a little bit from our lows, our average, the best we saw was a seven-day moving average of around 700. So we're up to about 1,100 as a country, just a little over 1,000 actually. Certainly a bit of an uptick, but nowhere near where we were. Same situation globally. So for that reason, I'm optimistic that medicine does win, that the efforts that the federal government has done to get us to this point and a new stimulus bill, which will not be as heavy as the first one, not as much spending, but enough to get us through into the fall here, will continue to keep us afloat. And then more importantly, from an economic standpoint, we'll watch the data steadily improve. Nowhere near where we were back in January and February, but certainly an improvement from the bottoms that we came from. So I think the tide is turning on multiple fronts. The ISM data, the data on housing, the data on spending, coupled with the news from the medical community, tells us that this may be the beginnings of a significant improvement higher. It'll be very interesting what happens with the labor market. It's a lagging indicator. It's going to represent July. But that means if we are able to open more effectively because we have broken the curve for the second time, the numbers for August should be pretty strong. Much of it will be predicated on what happens with school as well. When you roll it all together, we're not out of the woods yet, not by a long stretch. We still don't have a vaccine or a therapeutic fully approved, but although we're getting close, let's be honest, we're not there yet. The economic data were better, still pretty difficult to swallow from the overall standpoint of where we were, say, back in the beginning of the year. Much more to watch, but definitely somewhat optimistic as to the most recent round of data. It doesn't mean, though, that we go piling into the stock market. Stock valuations are not inexpensive. The average company is still down 10% in quarter-over-quarter revenue. Now, that number is actually a really good number. We're expecting negative 30 to maybe negative 40% quarter-over-quarter number. And it looks like it's coming in much better than expected. Now, being down negative 10 is nothing to blink at, but certainly it is exciting that it's not as bad as we thought it would be. But it doesn't mean we go piling into the stock market, because stocks are not cheap. You're at all-time highs or near all-time highs on the stock market. The stock market is, believe it or not, only down about 2% from its all-time highs. On an equally weighted basis, the stock market's down about 5%. So we're not out of the woods yet to where we were. We're not seeing U.S. companies earn any new money. They're losing money still. We're watching the federal government still lose money, or as a country lose money quarter over quarter. But the optimism of the resolution to this has pushed the stock market higher, coupled by the efforts of the Federal Reserve to make lots of liquidity available and put money into the marketplace, and the stimulus bills coming from the federal government. So that, you know, I don't want you to look at this that we're about to run hot here, because that's not the case. But I do think there's optimism in the marketplace enough that we should be in a neutral portfolio. You want to be in the stock market, you want to participate in it, and potentially begin to add more as we get more and more data. But I don't think you want to be overly aggressive until we've got more data on the strength of the U.S. economy opening up and what we're going to do from a therapeutic on top of all the other things we're already doing. Quite a lot to digest. Exciting times. Summers are usually pretty quiet. This week was a very exciting week since the last time we talked, and I think there's reasons for optimism. We'll see how it goes from here. And for that reason, we'll continue to do these calls week after week with the idea of providing you with information that gives you some insight into the data, an expectation of what's to come, and keeping a close eye on how the economy is growing and where we're going with the disease, the pandemic, and on the medical community and what they can do to help us get out of this. Wherever you are, I hope you stay safe. Wear a mask in public places, and we'll get through this together. Take care and have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.